Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
All right, welcome to our podcast on this October 26th, a Monday, day before the World Series. And, let's get right into the World Series. It's the Royals. It's the Mets. It should be entertaining. And joining us now is Dave Wills to chat about it. Dave, certainly as you take a look back at the American League Championship Series, I mean, you're looking at a Royal team that found a way. And, you know, you look at last year and this year, you probably could criticize Ned Yost a bit. First for Yordano Ventura and the use of him in the game against Oakland. And then this year, not bringing Wade Davis in to start the eighth. Certainly drew a lot of attention on social media, but it worked out. You know, it's all about the Joes, and the players found a way to win.
They do, and thanks for having me, Neil. I mean, again, you know, you look at their want-to, it's pretty impressive. You know, they got very, very close a year ago, and they've been on a mission from the beginning of spring training all the way now till the eve of the World Series here in 2015. So, you know, bully for them. They've had just enough starting pitching. Their bullpen has been a little beleaguered, you know, again, with a couple of guys going down, especially Greg Holland, their closer, that really did not have that great of a year. But Wade Davis really, really has stepped up, and there are a couple other young arms that have done a nice job as well. And then, you know, they made a couple of moves. I mean, Ben Zobrist has been a tremendous addition. I'm so happy for Ben, because not only has he been able to go now back to the World Series, but he has been an integral part of the Royals' success. I mean, he really has done a nice job at second base, and he's done a nice job in the two-hole in their lineup. So, you know, bully for them. And, you know, yeah, the Joes have gotten the job done, but you've got to give some credit, too, to some of the people behind the scenes. I mean, Ned Yost has indeed looked like, for the most part, he's pressed the right buttons. And I think the other part that some managers do is they just get out of the way and let some of their other coaches do the job. And Mike Gershley is the unsung hero in that particular game the other day, where he was waving Lorenzo Cain around from about second base on because he anticipated that Jose Bautista was going to throw to second base. And if you can be a step ahead of the game, and if you pay attention to what guys do in the previous games, that's why, I mean, I know I love the analytics. I think they're a big part of the game. But I think the eyeball test is another big part of the ball game. And the Royals coaches and their staff have kept their eyeballs open and made some observations, and that allowed them, among other ways, to beat the Toronto Blue Jays.
And I read a couple articles, too, just about advanced scouting to set that all up, you know, to have a feel for, you know, what Jose Bautista does and where he does like to throw the ball. So, you know, Mike Gershley getting some great information to help him, too. And the advanced scouts, you know, sometimes it's an unsung part of getting deep into the playoffs. And then beyond that, look, Lorenzo Cain never assumed. And he did the same thing against Houston when Carlos Gomez fell down. He never assumed. And having athletic players who don't assume give you a chance to make some special plays.
Well, athleticism is a big part. I mean, you know, it's funny. When they're mentioning the Kansas City Royals getting it done with pitching, defense, and then some speed, boy, that reminds me about the Tampa Bay Rays of yesteryear. It reminds me of the team that got to the World Series in 2008 that might have been the best team in baseball in 2010 and just could not get past the Texas Rangers. So, again, pitching and defense are big parts of it, and then being able to get some runs when you can't sit back and wait for that extra hit or wait for that home run. The Royals can manufacture runs with the best of them, and that's where their athleticism comes into play. And I think, you know, again, we're not quite there, no doubt about it, but I did like the way that we were able to display some athleticism over the last, 6 weeks of the season. On occasion, you'd see Steven Souza score on plays that probably shouldn't have happened. Mikey Matuk added a certain degree of athleticism to the team. We had Kevin Kiermaier already. You know, hopefully we get Desmond Jennings back. I think, again, athleticism is going to be a big part of whether or not the Rays improve from their 80-82 record this year, but it's on display. And, you know, again, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. When teams start winning a certain way, other teams want to follow suit. And, you know, this was the way, that was the Rays' way not too long ago. And hopefully we're about ready to get back to it ourselves.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about, as a fan, they say, hey, we need the home run guy. But, I mean, think about this. The American League's sixth best run scoring team is in the World Series, and they hit 28 fewer home runs than the Rays. And I know there are some threats in there that may be better overall than the Rays' threats for the long ball, but they're not a home run hitting team by any stretch of the imagination. And look, the Giants won the World Series without being a home run hitting team, so it can be done as long as you have the right athletes.
You're right. And, you know, again, I think it also talks to the point that, you know, they play in a ballpark that is not very home run friendly. It's one of the biggest parks going in Major League Baseball with some of the largest gaps. And so, you know, they play to their power. And, You know, they can run. They can go first and third. They can score from first on a double. And they've got more than just one or two guys that can do that. I mean, almost everybody in their lineup, when they're healthy, now can do that, maybe outside of Kendrys Morales. So, you know, they're a team in Salvador Perez. But they are a team that can get things done in many, many different ways. We've been talking about it since 2008, going back to when Stu Sternberg, Andrew Friedman, Matt Silverman, and Joe Maddon started putting this stuff together, saying it's about run prevention. And, you know, they can prevent runs with the best of them. They don't do a lot of shifting, but they've got guys who can go get the baseball at every position defensively, which allows them maybe not to do a lot of shifting. The Rays do tremendous amounts of shifting, and they do a pretty good job, a really good job, of run prevention, especially up the middle and in the outfield. So, you know, hopefully, again, we can start finding ways to score more runs. I mean, you know, yes, you're right. It's not about the home run, so to speak, but it's also about having some guys who can threaten to hit the home run. And I think, you know, when you start to pick out your poison here in this Rays lineup, for a long, long time it was Evan and Evan only. And then you sit there and say, well, I take my chances with James Loney, because what's the best thing he's going to do? Maybe hit an opposite field single. And what's the best thing that's going to happen? Evan's going to move from first to second base. And so to have the threat of the home run, to have the threat of the gapper, to pull the ball down the right field line for a left-handed hitter, those are the things that allow teams to score some extra runs. And it's not about the three-run home run all the time, but it's about getting the guy on, getting him over, and getting him in. And once again, we found out that the Rays just didn't do that enough, especially in the middle part of the season.
And, you know, the other thing that I find interesting about Kansas City as we get set for this World Series is, you know, they're near the bottom, similar to the Rays in terms of their innings eaten by their starting pitching. But their bullpen, I think, is just so more dominant in terms of, you mentioned that Holland had the injury, but, I mean, you still look up and down and have a Kelvin Herrera who can pitch the seventh inning. And having a guy who can throw 100 and having a Ryan Madsen, who did blow up in the last game of the ALCS, but had by and large a good season. Luke Hochschaver. I mean, every guy they come in there with is 94+.
Well, we talked about that a little bit with this Rays bullpen coming into the season. We really thought that the Rays were going to be able to bring some physicality, kind of like the Kansas City Royals. We started looking down the line and thinking, all right, you're going to have Brad Boxberg, who can hang around 94, 95 miles an hour. You're going to have Jake McGee, who's 97, 98. And Kevin Jeffson added to the mix, who's a mid-90s guy. And, you know, I don't think all three of those guys, obviously with Jake being hurt for the first month of the season, it just never seemed like we were able to get all three of those guys into the dominant mode that we expected them to. And then obviously we made the trade with Kevin Jeffson at the trade deadline. You know, Alex Colomay has added a certain element. Eddie Romero may be able to do that. You know, I think we're seeing high velocity. That's the thing that's going to be talked about a lot, I think, in this World Series, not only given the fact that, you know, again, the Royals can bring some guys out of the pen. We're going to throw in the mid to upper 90s all the time, but the New York Mets are going to start guys who are going to throw in the mid to upper 90s most of the night. So, you know, right now, physicality, especially from the pitching staff, is going to be talked about a lot over these next few days. And, you know, the Rays may not have somebody outside of Chris Archer, but you know what? Matt Moore at 95 with a little zip is pretty good. You know, Jake Odorizzi can throw 93, 94 on occasion with that little zip. So we may not be the physical starting staff that, say, the New York Mets have, but I think we've got enough guys that can throw the ball hard. And if you're, you know, hey, Jacob deGrom and everybody else knows that you can throw the fastball 98, 99 miles an hour, but if you're not putting it where you want, it doesn't matter. So, you know, it's going to be kind of, again, an interesting situation here. I think our pitching staff, I was looking at some numbers during this last couple of weeks. Our hard hit ball average was a little bit higher than I think I had anticipated it to be, but I think a lot of that came toward the end of the season when guys were a little beat up and tired, and we had some guys in that bullpen who were on fumes. But, you know, again, I think Matt Silverman, I know Matt Silverman and Chaim Bloom and, you know, Eric Neander know that this is a game that is built around run prevention. That's how we're going to win. It'd be nice if we can find another bat somewhere, but it's going to be about pitching it and catching it. That's going to allow the Rays to hang tough. And when you think about how this team got off to a 40-30 start, it wasn't because we were hitting home runs. It was because we were pitching it and catching it.
Indeed. And the Royals do. One error in the playoffs so far. And, you know, you mentioned how happy you are for Ben Zobrist. On the flip side, you've got David Price, who goes into free agency. I think he's hurt his value some, but not much, with the fact that he hasn't won a playoff game as a starter. Some of it is a little bit of bad luck. I mean, you leave in a 2-1 ball game. That's really not his fault in this big spot, this big moment. How much do you think he's hurt value-wise on the free agent market? And what are the chances you think he re-signs with Toronto? I still don't think, because of the Canadian exchange, that he ends up back in Toronto.
Well, I don't think, Neil, that we're going to be having to worry about any tag days for David Price, or that he's going to have to get a part-time job during the offseason to make ends meet. I think he's still going to get somewhere in that $25 million range. Is the $30 million range out of the question? Who knows? I mean, there still may be a team or two out there that are trying to make a splash. I mean, you can never count out the Boston Red Sox when they're trying to make a splash, or for that matter, you know, again, the New York Yankees. You know, the Dodgers are looking to make a splash. I mean, all the teams that need to make a splash or that want to make a splash all have pretty good, you know, checkbooks to work with. So I'm not going to say that David's not going to get $30 million a year, but I agree. I think it hurt him a little bit. I think there are teams, though, that are still thinking, you know what, maybe he's getting all these losses out of the way, and, you know, kind of a la Randy Johnson. So, you know, I was kind of reading some message boards in Chicago about the Cub fans, and people are saying, would you offer $30 million a year to get David Price? And a majority of them said no. So I think on the outside, from the fan point of view, I think his price tag has probably gone down a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see from the baseball side, you know, who is going to take that chance. Will it be, you know, the Dodgers? And would they be just, you know, maybe with a guy like David, too, you can just slide him right into that number two spot and take a little bit of that pressure off him and hide him behind Clayton Kershaw if they don't, you know, come back with Greinke. You know, the Cubs might be looking to make a big splash. And, you know, he wouldn't have to just come out and burst on the scene and be the savior because they already think that they've got one in Arrieta. And then they've also got John Lester. So, and then, you know, the Red Sox might be looking to make a big splash to try to get right back into the thick of things in the American League East. So David's not going to have to worry about any kind of a part-time job to supplement whatever income he might have lost because he lost games this postseason. I think he's still going to do pretty good.
Speaking of the Cubs, you know, you mentioned their fan base and their, let's say, not as excited about the possibility of adding a Price at that price. How surprised were you about the clean sweep in the NLCS, and does that take any of the luster off what was for them obviously a special season?
You know, it's funny. I think, you know, having been from that market, I think there's half of the market's pretty happy that it ended that way, and then there's another part of the market that obviously is seeing themselves, well, you know what, we weren't supposed to be here, but we exceeded expectations. I think, you know, you look at their postseason record, I think they actually end up finishing under 500. With that sweep of the New York Mets. So it's one of those things where I think Joe did a marvelous job. You know, there's no guarantees that you're going to automatically get better. I think obviously they think that they do have a very, very young core in Rizzo and Bryant and, you know, Addison Russell and even some of the guys that have been there for a little while. Starling Castro is still, what, 26, 27 mm-hmm. years old. And, you know, their pitching staff's in pretty good shape. But they need some work in their bullpen. They're going to need to upgrade there. They're going to probably need another starter. And let's remember this, they finished third in their division. I mean, their division is still very, very good with the Cardinals. I don't expect them to be going anywhere. And the same thing with the you know, Pittsburgh Pirates are a very, very good team. So they're still going to have their work cut out for them come 2016. But they did exceed expectations. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But now all of a sudden, you know, people are going to be gunning for it. Now they're going to be looking for the Chicago Cubs. It's going to be a little different for them the following year. And you know, I went through this before. They were going to do the same thing. They did it with Dusty Baker. They got to the postseason, came up short. And, oh, we'll be back. Lou Piniella did the same thing back in, you know, 08, 07, 08. They'll be back. You know what? They never did get back. So Joe did some great work there for the Chicago Cubs, but there's no guarantee just because they're young, they're going to automatically get better.
Well, to me, the story of their season, I mean, you look at them and say, how similar are they to the Rays other than the fact that they can go out and budget? I mean, 08 didn't lead to success in 09. You got a division in 10, but you didn't get back to the World Series with basically the same core. You know, I'm sure from Joe Maddon's standpoint, we'll see what he learned. I mean, the one thing he will have the benefit of is being able to go out and spend a little more cash to supplement what they have on the roster.
Yeah, and with that being said, though, I mean, you know, you go back to 2009, and what was one of the things that the Rays wanted to add? They wanted to add a left-handed hitter. We did that with Pat Brohl, and we thought we were going to be a better team than we were in 08, and it just didn't work out that way. So, you know, this is about pitching and defense. And, you know, their pitching was okay. I mean, they had Arrieta, who might be the Cy Young Award winner, and they had Lester, who was above average. But the question is going to be after that, all right, how are they going to fill in their rotation? And over a long season, you know, that has to be answered if they are going to take the next step. And the same thing with their bullpen. You know, their bullpen, Joe Maddon really had to match up and really, really work. And, you know, they made some adjustments toward the end of the season, adding guys like Fernando Rodney and moving guys here and there. But, you know, they're going to have to supplement that. And then their outfield defense was not very good. I mean, you know, Kyle Schwarber probably cost them a game or two in the postseason by butchering a few baseballs out there. So, and their catching, you know, might need to be upgraded. So they've got room for improvement. They're not, you know, again, if they were to keep that core team together and just bring everybody back next year, there's no guarantees they're going to get better. So they've got to do some tweaking to that roster, and it will be interesting to see because, yes, they were filling the stands. Their TV ratings are up. They do have a little bigger paycheck or, you know, checkbook to work with than the Rays did from 08 to 09. But it's not going to be that easy because they're, like we said, there's other teams that have bigger checkbooks that are going to be looking to do the same things as the Cubs.
I saw in your social media you found that hat. Is that the real reason that the Cubs lost this series and got swept? Did you plan it?
I did not. I went out there to go do something on my lawn, and that little area there between my house and the neighbor's house, some of the neighborhood kids like to go out there and play wiffle ball or football or what have you, and one of them left their New York Mets hat on my lawn. So I don't know if that was a sign that the Mets were going to get the job done or what, but it sure turned out to be that way. But I do not have any New York Mets or any New York anything in my house. So that was from a neighbor.
And certainly, you know, you talk about young teams and young talented teams. I mean, this is a pretty special rotation to watch and enjoy. And there's no guarantee that they get back here next year either. But it's certainly been enjoyable to watch them. And I'm anxious to see how that quartet evolves.
Oh, it's going to be kind of fun. I mean, you know, again, all those guys, though, too, as we have found out over the last couple of years, are also one pitch away from maybe going and being gone for 12 to 18 months. So enjoy it while you can. It's going to be kind of interesting to watch how they continue to evolve. And, you know, as we found out, too, with, you know, Syndergaard and also DeGrom, they both throw the ball very, very hard. But they both have found out that it's about placing your fastball in the proper spot and then mixing in your off-speed pitches. And, you know, just in talking to Joe Maddon over the last couple of days about the downfall of the Cubs, he said it really had nothing to do with their velocity. It had to do with their secondary pitches that they were putting in place the exact spot they wanted to do. Matt Harvey's changeup was very, very good. Syndergaard's breaking ball was getting the job done. So a lot of people in the national media are talking about the velocity, and probably rightly so, but it was the secondary pitches and the execution of those secondary pitches that really kept the Cubs off balance.
Well, when you know, though, in the back of your mind that 98's there, you do have to react a lot faster to the secondary stuff. I mean,
no doubt about it. But, you know, again, it's you know, they've done a nice job, and it comes back to, again, scouting, keeping hitters off balance. And it is awful nice, and it's something I never had to worry about, being able to reach back and having 97, 98, 99 at your disposal. And that's what separates the, you know, the pretenders from the contenders. There's no doubt. They have grown up quickly.
And look, the Cubs had a fair amount of strikeout in them. The Royals are the toughest team in baseball to strike out. To me, as I look at this series, it comes down to how efficient are the starting pitchers for the Mets going to be against Kansas City's hitters, because the bridge bullpen to Familia is not that imposing.
No, and you know, the other thing about it is too is we know that the Royals can grind out at bats with the best of them. So if the Mets starters are out of the ball game in the fifth or, you know, sixth innings of games, it's going to be really, really hard for the Mets to win those games. I think the longer their starters go, the better chance they have at winning. But we know there's a little bit of a difference, too, between an American League lineup and a National League lineup, especially, obviously, with the first two games being in the American League ballpark where you're going to be using the DH. You know, you look at that Cub lineup, and you know, Dexter Fowler was nice, and then, you know, they kind of Schwarber, and you had, you know, Rizzo, and you had Bryant, you brought him in, and, you know, their top five or six guys were pretty good, but when they had David Ross in the lineup, and it was almost like having two or three pitchers in the lineup. So you're not going to have that luxury when you're facing the Kansas City Royals. There are no pitchers in their lineup, especially in the first two games.
And I look, I mean, even when they have to take somebody out, yeah, they probably lose Morales in the National League ballpark. But, I mean, they're still, to me, they're still a better lineup overall than the Mets, and they're better defensively. And for their defense and for their bullpen and for their lineup, I'm going to go with Kansas City in six in the World Series. I think they have unfinished business to do. They've also got a couple more Rays, so it's easier to root for Zobrist, Wade Davis, and Brandon Gomes, and even Dave Island over there, over the Kelly Johnson group.
Yeah, I mean, you meant Johnny Gomes, I know that.
Johnny Gomes, Brandon.
You know, it is. It's an easier group for me to root for, no doubt about it, and I probably am leaning toward that. I think, you know, I saw another stat that, what is it, the last couple of American League teams that have lost the previous World Series in a Game 7 or whatever have come back to win the next one if they made it there. So there's some history on Kansas City's side. They've been there. They've done that. But they've got to be able to secure home field. That was something that the Cubs weren't able to do, didn't have in the National League Championship Series. And, you know this as well as I do, Neil. You get a young team, and you allow them to gain some momentum, they're going to ride that wave for a long time. So it really would be imperative for, in tomorrow's game one, for the Royals to put a big zero up on the board, somehow, some way, figure out a way to keep Daniel Murphy quiet, and then get an early lead and put the pressure on the Mets, who right now aren't feeling a whole lot of pressure because they were up and led in almost every inning of the games in the National League Championship Series. So I think the Royals are the better team, but the better team doesn't always win the World Series.
Agree. I think, look, in the Cubs' case, they probably woke up and kind of saw the stage they were at, and some of their young players might have seen the same. And if the Royals put the pressure on the Mets, you know, so be it. The one thing about Kansas City is they've been good at coming back.
True. And when when you live and die by the homer, and the Blue Jays found that out, and the Cubs found that out, when the weather is not conducive to home run hitting, you've got to figure out other way to score runs. The Royals know how to do that. They know how to do skid guys on, get them over, and get them in. And that was the advantage that the Mets had over the Cubs, starting those first two games in New York when it was 40 degrees and really, really hard to hit home runs. So they were able to get on a little bit of a roll there, and then obviously took advantage of some pitching in game 3 and 4 where they got early leads and never fell behind.
Now we'll also see if 6 days off does anything to Daniel Murphy, because, I mean, you can't imagine he can keep it up.
Probably not, but, for all the millions that David Price might have lost, Daniel Murphy might be getting some of them in his pocket.
Indeed. It should be for an entertaining offseason, hopefully a good World Series. You know, I thought the LCSs were I mean, not compared to the Division Series. We got some Game 5s. Hopefully we get at least a Game 6, if not a Game 7, too.
Just good games. I mean, even last year's World Series, everybody talks about, what a World Series it was. It won 7 games. Almost every game was a blowout leading up until Game 7, which was finally a good game, and ended up being a one-run ball game. So I just want entertaining and well-played baseball, and I'd like America to, pay attention and see what's happening here, because, baseball's a fun sport to watch, and I hope that people watch this and talk about the Yankees or the Mets and the Royals, the velocity against a team that can really grind it out. Should be kind of fun.
Indeed. Thanks again, Dave. Enjoy the rest of the offseason. We'll be talking to you soon.
Look forward to it, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And thanks very much to Dave for joining us, and we hope will be an entertaining World Series. Now, there are a couple bits of news and notes on the Rays I wanted to make sure to touch on. And, of course, you can find out about a lot of this on our blog, raysradio.moblogs.com. One thing we didn't document, and probably doesn't come as a major surprise, was that Chaim Bloom, who was the Rays' vice president on the baseball operations side, was a finalist for a general manager job, actually for the second time this offseason. First for the Brewers, now for the Phillies. Matt Klentak, who had been with the Angels, was considered the front runner all along, and he eventually got the job. And certainly it speaks highly of Chaim Bloom and his talents that he was a finalist twice, and I'm sure there will be a time where he does get a general manager job, and certainly we're rooting for him. And, you know, any executive for an opportunity to continue to have chances to be challenged and to continue to move up the ladder. And Chaim is a very, very talented individual. Now, speaking of talents, there are some very young Rays talents that are out in Australia. They started the Winter Australian Baseball League, and there are several Rays who are out there who we documented on our blog, one of them being a former first-round pick and catcher Nick Schufo. Braylon Jackson, an outfielder, is out in Australia as well, as is infielder Riley Unruh. And Justin Williams, who was acquired in the Jeremy Hellickson trade from Arizona. They, along with Max Tisenbaum, were out playing for the Brisbane Bandits. And Michael Johns, who was the manager for the Charlotte Stonecrabs this year and won a championship, is the coach out there. Now, it's his second visit to Australia. He was out there back when the 2011 offseason, where Kevin Kiermaier really made a major push forward, and that kind of launched him into his success through the Rays minor league system and eventually to be a very good big leaguer. And so we'll be keeping an eye on those guys. And again, we have thumbnail sketches of each on our blog, raysradio.moblogs.com. Now, after the World Series is really where things take a step forward in terms of the offseason. And we'll be keeping a close tab on what's going on with the Rays. 5 days after the World Series is when the Rays have to remove guys from the 60-day DL. Now, 3 guys after the World Series is over will become officially free agents. Grady Sizemore, Asdrubal Cabrera, and John Jaso. That'll open up 3 spots on the 40. 4 guys have to be added to the 40 initially, and those being guys who are injured. Alex Cobb, Birch Smith, Jeff Beliveau, and Grayson Garvin. So the Rays have to decide whether to put all four of those guys on. If they do, they would have to designate someone for assignment from their 40-man roster. And again, that has to be within 5 days after the World Series ends, and then you really start to see some more movement that we'll be documenting on our next podcast. So thanks to Dave Wills for joining us, and enjoy the World Series. We'll see you after that.